Hello, and welcome to another bonus episode of the Supermassive podcast, where we tackle more of your questions. This time, we're recording in person at the UK's National Astronomy Meeting 2023 in Cardiff. I am astrophysicist Dr. Becky Smethurst, and with me is the Deputy Director of the Royal Astronomical Society, Dr. Robert Massey. Robert, it's lovely to actually physically see you.
Amazing, isn't it? I'm sitting there completely exhausted preparing for this conference, but I get here and it's great because there are hundreds of people milling around all talking about astronomy, enthusing about it, you know, people like Becky, obviously, but lots and lots of others as well. So it's really great. I mean, we have maybe, I think we had to close it because there were too many people coming. So we had to close it to in-person registration. So we got another couple of hundred online, maybe 800 people, which is a record for us for when we run on our own.
It's
brilliant. Lovely atmosphere.
That explains why I've already met like three people I haven't seen in 5 years in the space of half an hour, because there's just so many of us here this year. It's fab. Izzy, however, can't be with us. She's fine, but she just couldn't make it to Cardiff. So instead, our editor, Richard Hollingham, will be putting your questions to us. Richard, you are no longer the disembodied voice.
No, I'm a real person. Really exist. Izzy apologises. She's still stuck in the time vortex from last month's podcast. Now, our June 2023 edition was about the history of astronomy. So let's start with this question from Sarah. And I like this particularly because she says such nice things. This is probably one for both of you, I would say. Hello, says Sarah. I'm going to ask you a question, but first I just want to say how much I adore the podcast. She shouts, adore! Back in 2009, I got a D in my A-level maths and gave up all sciencey things because I thought it just wasn't for a girl like me. But over the past couple of years, I've listened religiously to the Supermassive podcast and read both of Becky's books.
Oh, thanks, Sarah.
Nowadays, I'm a writer-editor in my early 30s, but I spend quite a bit of my free time learning about physics and maths, something I thought I'd never do. And the Supermassive podcast has played a big part in that, probably because I identify with loving space and Taylor Swift.
Yes.
This is like your perfect listener.
I'm like, Sarah, where have you popped out of the ground from? I love you.
Anyway, my question regarding history of astronomy is that I've heard lots of different cultures sorted the stars into similar shapes and patterns. Do we know the reason for this?
Well, it's a really great question. And if you had to ask the question, are they the same in different cultures? It turns out it's sort of yes and no. So the intriguing thing is, I went into this, I thought, oh, there's all these different groupings. And of course, people in different parts of the world have different constellations. However, there are also these really intriguing similarities. I found an article in The Conversation, which collates things from academics around the world, by Duane Hamaker from Monash University in Australia. And he'd looked at it and he found that Aboriginal representations of constellations included star patterns like Orion. And they also recognised Orion as a kind of hunter, chasing the Pleiades, in other words, with real similarity with Greek mythology, despite the fact they are thousands of years and thousands of kilometres apart. So incredibly intriguing. So yeah, the Wiradjuri traditions, the Biamian Wiradjuri and the Great Victoria Desert as well, you know, they see Orion and they see the Pleiades in exactly the same way. Now, I thought, you know what, these are big, prominent objects.
Yeah.
So it's not hugely surprising. And apparently the same applies to Aquila the Eagle, Gemini, Sagittarius, and also those dark representations in the Milky Way that came up last month when we talked about seeing them. So they are the same or similar in Australia as in South America. And yet, obviously, you know, there was no sensible or meaningful contact between those two cultures. Now, the caveat is that if you look at things like the Dunhuang Star Atlas, which is from 700 AD or so, and that's in the British Museum collection, that has rather different patterns. So some cultures did do it differently, but it really amazes me that you see separated cultures who cannot possibly have been in contact coming up with the same things.
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes from the fact that, I mean, if you just look up at the sky, I mean, yes, we take the mick out of the Greeks for the fact that there's a W, supposedly looks like a woman, but some of them, like Orion, he does look like a man. So it would make sense, I think, that, you know, if they're all looking at the same sky, especially in cultures that were so much more connected to the sky than we are sort of today in modern society necessarily, in terms of noticing what's up there all the time, it kind of makes sense in my head, but it almost makes me wonder whether, like, if people tried to, like, map the migrations of people based on, like, you know, the different star lore that they had, that would be so exciting to see. And, you know, star lore is not just for people thousands of years ago. If you want to make up your own, go ahead, everybody, is what I say. Find whatever you want in the sky. Sarah, you know, let's find the Taylor Swift Star Lord together. Let's do that.
She's going to petition the IU, aren't you?
Okay, this question is from Jordan Lucas Stone. I know that astronomy and astrology used to be pretty much the same study, and now they're not similar at all. How and when did that split occur? And how do I keep calm when someone says that because I have a telescope, I must be really into astrology? Yeah. Robert put his head in his hands at that point.
Yeah, I need to tell myself to keep calmer sometimes at these things, because there was recently a piece in the press on Caroline Herschel, great article, and it described her in the headline as leading astrologer, and I just thought, she was a talented, hugely talented astronomer, sister of William Herschel. Anyway, I've got to keep calm myself at these things. But it is fair to say that astrology and astronomy were intertwined, obviously, until about 400 years ago when you had that explosion in scientific discovery, I guess principally around the invention of the telescope, when we started to understand that the planets were not just points of light or ethereal things, but they were real worlds. So it became more obvious we were looking at physical reality close to our own. But it is worth noting that Galileo and Tycho Brahe were both believers in astrology, and it was only when you went to the second half of the 17th century that faded out. And there's also the other angle, which is that religions like Christianity and Islam both took a quite dismissive view of it as well. And I think that's presumably because it's a kind of competing worldview that it's saying, well, you've got this one God religion and here you are with this other things talking about this mystical stuff that goes with it. So, but I would say, yeah, I mean, it's a pseudoscience. I mean, the classic thing to remember is when you're born, the influence of the midwife is rather greater than the influence of where Jupiter is in the night sky. And I do think there's an opportunity for kind of teachers as well. You know, if you maybe in thinking about this, rather than just sort of, I don't know, dismissing the interest of kids in this sort of stuff at hand, is to say, well, okay, you think this, you know, well, why don't you go away and work out just what the influence Jupiter or Saturn or Mars actually has on you? And or maybe look at those predictions and say over the months in those columns and say, did they really come true? You know, is it actually very testable, or are you in fact looking at something which is not a science at all?
Yeah. I mean, the keeping calm bit is hard. I'll give you that. But I think it's fair enough when people do confuse it, because, you know, biology, zoology, like a lot of the sciences end in ology. So it makes sense that people hear astro and think astrology. And it's sort of like, how do you stop yourself getting mad at them for that slip up when it's so offensive to hear it described that way? But I think, you know, the way I sort of like look at it now and explain it to people is like, astrology is something you can have fun with if you want, but it's akin to being like, what's your Hogwarts house? You know, it's like, what's your star sign? It's like, oh, I'm a Gryffindor. Like, does that really mean that, like, you know, I'm going to have a bad month because, you know, whatever. That's how ridiculous it sounds, I think, when you understand how much of a pseudoscience astrology actually is. So that's how I try and explain it back to people if they necessarily get those two things confused.
And you both managed to be calm about it.
On the outside, on the inside, probably raging.
I probably need to go. When I see these articles, I need to say, now, don't tweet about it yet. Go away, have a think, and be nice. Yeah. To be fair, that article I'm talking about was corrected. So they did actually pick up on it. It was in the art newspaper, I think, and they did fix it. So fair enough. You know.
Yeah, I think I have sympathy for people, you know, in everyday life that when they say it to you. But for, yeah, journalists and stuff like that, it is something that's, they need to get right. When you see it like on news stories, you know, the ticker at the bottom that says like your name and then who they are. I've had astrologer before and it just, it makes my skin crawl.
Okay, well, let's move on from history to a question from Emily. She says, I've been binge listening the show and I'm eager for more. Mm. Oh, no. My son, Andy, in year one, wants to know why Venus is hotter than Mercury while closer to the sun. Is it... And is it that Venus is volcanic?
Yeah, so Venus is hotter than Mercury. Now, this is because it's not all to do with the fact that how much light are you receiving from the sun itself, because Mercury clearly receives more light than Venus does. And when we look at something called effective temperature, which is essentially to say how much energy reaches those planets, and therefore, if they reflected that energy, what temperature would that astronomical object, astronomical body have? Mercury's would be higher just because it receives more light. But if you take into account the fact that Venus has an incredibly thick atmosphere, very sort of smoggy with all this like acidic SO2 in there and carbon dioxide, it is essentially the ultimate greenhouse of a planet. And so when we talk about climate change and the greenhouse effect on Earth, we're always being like, the worst case scenario is to end up like Venus. Because essentially what happens is the sun's light comes into Venus's atmosphere, and instead of reflecting off the surface of Venus and back out, it gets trapped and it just sort of pings around in the atmosphere, slowly building up and slowly getting hotter and hotter and hotter, which is why it's so much hotter than Mercury, which has no atmosphere, that just allows the sunlight to come in, bake its surface, but then completely get reflected off again.
Am I making this up, or does Mercury actually have some ice on it?
There is, yeah, there is. Scratches his head. Off the cuff question. No, there is the detection with radio telescopes, and I think with the Messenger spacecraft, because there are regions near the poles that never receive sunlight, or very rarely, and they're akin to similar places on the moon for the same reason. So yeah, even though it's close to the sun, if you're in permanent shadow, the absence of an atmosphere means that you also have extreme cold. And so if it never ever sees sunlight, it stays cold. So yeah, there is probably ice there.
Okay, this now from Chris in Leicester. I have a question for Becky regarding white holes. Mm. Having read a little bit about them, I still cannot wrap my head around what they actually are and whether they exist or not. Is any work/research being done to try to find them? And what would one look like if you could see it through a telescope? Any help would be appreciated to settle my nerves about this, just in case one appears above the Earth tomorrow, light Unicron in the new Transformers movie. I mean, they've thought this through.
They really have. Chris, I'm so sorry if you were watching the new Transformers movie and couldn't enjoy it because you were desperately worried about this. As an astrophysicist, I will set your fears at rest. There is nothing to worry about here. First of all, white holes are completely hypothetical still. We've never detected anything that could remotely look like one of them. So as for what they are, the best way to think of them is just in every single way possible, they are opposite to a black hole. So in the same way that, you know, once stuff has crossed the event horizon of a black hole, that sort of point of no return where you'd have to be traveling through the speed of light, nothing can escape a black hole. For the white hole, nothing can get into it. All stuff can only get out of it. And in the same way, sort of if we think about black holes in terms of, you know, what is your path in the future? What is happening in terms of time? Your only future path as you get close to that black hole is to end up in it. Whereas for a white hole, the only future path you have is to end up out of it if you are in it. So anything you can think of about a black hole, flip it and you've got a white hole. There's a lot of research being done on them from a very theoretical perspective, trying to work it out in terms of, okay, how would Einstein's general relativity, our best theory of gravity, actually describe these things in terms of singularities, you know, these points where we end up dividing by zero and everyone, including mathematicians, cries everywhere. In terms of describing them that way, yes, there's a lot of research being done because it could be that, you know, in order to explain how the universe began and sort of like, you know, the Big Bang and the expansion of the universe, maybe a white hole is what was responsible. Or maybe even if you get down inside a black hole, you have a white hole in the center, which is spewing out a whole other universe. There's a lot of very sort of like rabbit holes you can go down in terms of white holes, but they're so, so theoretical. And we've never actually seen anything that could be a white hole in a telescope. Because the thing about white holes is if they're spewing stuff out everywhere, they'd be incredibly bright and it would be incredibly difficult to miss them. So it's sort of, that's why they're still very hypothetical. We've never found anything that looks like them. And it's definitely on my list of things not to worry about.
So there's no chance one will appear above the Earth tomorrow?
Sadly not. I think there's about the same chance that I have as Chris Hemsworth falling through my ceiling, like in the Thor movie, because Jane, the astrophysicist, I've been waiting. Everyone's like, oh, you're just like Jane in the Thor movies. And I'm like, well, where is Thor then?
Finally, then, we've had an email from Raf, who says, great podcast as always. You notice I've kept all these comments in. About yeah, how good
like,
the podcast
like
is,
yeah. Yeah, you're really like, you're just sort of massaging our egos.
That's essentially my job, yeah. If you could pick any celestial object to replace the moon in the Earth's sky, i.e. would look roughly the same size, what would it be? Assume no catastrophic events occur as a result. Also, for Becky, what if you couldn't pick Saturn? Well, so obviously your first choice, Becky, would be Saturn.
It would, yeah. Seeing Saturn that large would be incredible. But I can't pick Saturn, so let me have a think.
Okay, we'll go to Robert while you have a think. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I probably would go with Saturn too, but I'm not going to. I think it would probably be Mars. Now, that would be a bit sort of catastrophic because it would change the Earth into a binary planet system. Assume no catastrophes. We would become a binary planet system. It would be quite weird. But I think the reason I like it is, A, because Mars is, you know, it's really evocative. You see details on it. It looks like a place you can go and walk around. All the rovers driving around the surface have done that for us. And when you see a total lunar eclipse, and they obviously every so often, you know, get clear skies, convenient time of night, all that stuff, it looks a bit like Mars is already there in the sky. During totality, you've got this weird red ball. So I always have that kind of feeling for it already. And I think, yeah, it would be quite cool to have a red planet in the sky as well.
Yeah. Okay, I'll give you that. The thing that's thrown me is that, you know what I think I would pick is a galaxy. Because I studied galaxies and having one so close by and seeing the beautiful like spiral structure or something would be amazing. But in the question from Rav, he said, it would look roughly the same size. But actually, Andromeda is 3 times the size of the full moon already. We just can't see it with our eyes because it's too faint. So maybe if I could drag Andromeda just a bit closer so that we could see its full extent, even if it would be 3 times the size of the moon, not the size of the moon, I think I'd do that because that would be... incredible
isn't
to see.
Still very faint though. The surface brightness stays the same.
So work out some lighting arrangement.
Yeah, we need to make Andromeda brighter, basically.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Or just
starburst.
Put it at the distance of the moon. Then I think it would be the entire sky. But yeah, maybe the distance of the LMC, like the Large Magellanic Cloud in the southern hemisphere, that would be cool if it was that close.
Nice bright stuff in the sky.
Could I throw in Pluto as an option? Because I think Pluto looks incredible.
Yeah, well, you'd have to bring Charon with you. It would be a binary planet system. That would be amazing.
Because
that would be quite cool.
They just look so much more exciting than we possibly imagined.
Yeah.
And I just think they're there all the time. We could just look at them all the time.
And also, you'd be able to see the moons like orbiting and actually notice the positions of it change.
That would be awesome.
That's why Saturn would be cool, because you'd also see the moons of Saturn. And obviously, you've got Phobos and Deimos for Mars, so you can see those two little asteroids.
They're a bit faint, but I reckon, I reckon Saturn's moons, Jupiter's moons. But yeah, Pluto and Charon, I'd go with that. Exotic looking worlds. Yeah, that would really, I mean, they would really be radically changed by being brought 40 times closer to the sun. However, no catastrophes, I know, no catastrophes. Magic planets, I'm up for that.
Thank you, everyone, for sending your questions. We do read them all, and we try to get as many as possible into each episode.
Yeah, these questions are great. Keep them coming, guys. And we've been having so much fun with these bonus episodes. We hope you've been enjoying them too. So you can email podcast@ras.ac.uk. You can tweet @RoyalAstroSoc. And we're also on Instagram @TheSupermassivePod to keep your questions coming to us. We'll be back soon with another episode. But until then, happy stargazing.